Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Cyber Security Recruiter Podcast. Today, I'm joined by Nathan Adams. How are you doing?
Doing well.
Good. For everyone there listening, me and Nathan have just been talking about Thanksgiving dinner and not getting interrupted by incidents, or maybe getting interrupted by incidents. But I think you had a relatively stress-free holiday period, mate. Am I right?
That's right. I was saying there's two jobs you don't want to be in when it comes to holidays, and that's retail and cybersecurity.
Yeah, I've got a funny story, Nathan. When I was very young, I worked in retail, and on the Boxing Day sale in the UK, they wanted me to start. There's a famous store that was notorious for opening at 5, 6 a.m., and they put me on that 5, 6 a.m. shift. And in my younger days, I was a little more wild than I am now. And long story short, I didn't turn up and I got the sack. So that was my retail career over. There you go. Cool. Welcome to the show, Nathan. For listeners that don't know you, I'm just going to do you a bit of an intro. If I get any of this wrong, feel free to correct me or shout at me after, my friend. But started off in the United States Air Force as a visual imagery and intrusion detection systems engineer. You were there for over 5 years. Then moved on to a security engineer team lead for Richmond Communications Group. You've also been chief estimator and project manager. In the past, you've been a solutions engineer, another managerial position. You were also a manager at Collins Aerospace. Currently, you're at Wiz Nucleus Inc. and have progressed to executive vice president of security operations, a position you've held for over 7 years. Nathan, welcome to the show.
Good to be here.
Meg.
Just to clarify, I was an individual contributor at Collins Aerospace.
So I didn't get it, but I didn't do too bad.
Sounds perfect.
Yeah, thanks, mate. But before we get into it, I'd like to unpack your journey. I'd like to talk about that transition of you coming out of the Air Force into the commercial world, breaking into cybersecurity. There'll be a lot of people now coming out of the forces into cybersecurity. I'm sure there's some key learnings that you can share with the listeners and just unpacking your journey all the way up to the level that you're at now. I'll start where I always start, mate, which is, I know I've done you a bit of an intro, but I feel I can never do it as well as you. So who are you and what do you get up to and what's a day in the life of Nathan right now?
Sure. So we call ourselves a systems integrator. So similar to MSP, but we typically will just deploy solutions to a client and then hand it over to their team as opposed to continually managing it. So it's slightly different business model, a lot more project-based. We do have ongoing service contracts and stay engaged with that client for a decade after the initial deployment and do other projects that pop up. So we're a partner with them, another branch of their own internal engineering team.
That sounds really good to be engaged for that long. It sounds like good kind of residual value, solid business model if they're keeping you on the books for that long.
It's a lot different than just turn and burn. You form relationships that can last decade, 15 years, so they become part of, and being in that position, it's easy to become a trusted advisor, as they say, where their business as good or better than them sometimes, because you also have the perspective of looking at it from the outside. They can give you a little course correction if you suggest something that's a little off base.
Mm. The only thing I can relate it to is obviously recruitment, and I know from the longer standing clients, just understanding the cultural aspects and what the actual teams, it makes a big difference. It makes the customer's life easier, but it makes your life easier as well. It's mutually beneficial, isn't it?
You can just pick up the phone and talk to them just like they're on your team and they're your employer.
Yeah, it sounds good. I think that word partnership gets thrown around a bit, but that sounds like it's genuine partnerships when it's that length of time. It sounds good.
Yes.
All right, Nathan, I know whenever I get anyone on that's either come out the Air Force or anything like that, I do like to talk about that transitional phase, because I think breaking into cybersecurity is hard enough. Transitioning from the Air Force into the commercial world makes it doubly hard, because you've probably got all sorts going through your mind and it's probably pretty scary. Is there any advice you've got for the listeners or anything you wish you knew then that you know now?
Transitioning out of the military into the civilian workforce, the problem I face is the skills on your resume. There's no clear parallel to the civilian work, especially if you have a really military specific role. If you were already in cyber in the military, then it's a little easier. You can talk about ticket close rates or, you know, harden this system to this standard, et cetera. But a lot of these other military jobs that are military specific, the civilian world, they don't understand the language you're speaking. And as hard as you try, it just falls flat. You really need someone to write your resume who's not in the military. So when they read that bullet point, they can say, yeah, I know what you're talking about. If you start talking about AF Form 617 or DD-214, no one knows what any of that means. Normalizing it with someone who's not in the military. Because if you just give it to another military person, they're going to do the same thing and say, there, it looks even better now, but should not be trusted either. From the civilian side, if you weren't in the military, it's impossible for you to really understand the value that a veteran can bring. And that's unfortunate. They say the platitudes like, oh yeah, we like to hire veterans, but there's skill sets that are intangible and invaluable that a civilian just can't understand. And I don't know the secret to unlocking those and communicating those, but someone that's hired veterans will see it when they do it. Now, there's not every veteran is A+ star, so it's not a guarantee, but looking for things like discipline and commitment to a mission, those are things that you can expect from a veteran that a lot of civilian candidates won't have to the same degree.
It's true, because I hear that a lot about people saying they favor veterans, but it's interesting to hear you say that if they're not from that background, they don't understand to the true extent. Discipline's one that sprang to mind straight away for me. I would always see a military person as good, solid, on point, disciplined. Is there anything else that you think could help employers understand why a veteran brings so much value? Or is there any reason why don't you think people outside the military do grasp it? Do you think just because they haven't been through it? Or
you live 5 lives in every year of the military, 5 years in one. Say someone's 18 years old going into the military, the experience they go through from 18 to 23 of their first enlistment is worlds beyond if you were to hire an 18-year-old and say, work for our company. What role would you hire an 18-year-old? It'd be a very entry level. They'd be doing repetitive tasks, and then you'd slowly develop them. Whereas the Air Force all the military, they take that 18-year-old, they invest $150,000 of training and technical training, and then immediately throw them into high-value roles up to and including wartime, immense stress and pressure. So when they come out, a 23-year-old might have the life experiences of someone who would be 28 or 30 if they had not gone through it. That's the bonus value you get when you hire someone from the military.
So basically, they've essentially got a lot more character. They've really been through it.
Yeah, they've been given responsibilities, you know, beyond what you typically would. I remember we were in charge of audits in Iraq. I was one of the leads in a NOC, and you're talking about mission critical uptimes, where for me to have been put in that position as a 22-year-old, it wouldn't have happened. Mm-hmm. But in the military, they have to trust these people and they expect them to perform at a high level. So,
yeah, I can imagine working as a team. I bet if you're in any kind of leadership role in that situation, you soon have to get to grips with how it's done.
Yeah. Then there's also you're taking direct orders. You might be giving direct orders, and I didn't feel like that's the right thing to do. So that's beneficial to a manager, certainly, when you have someone that is like, oh, brother, is this guy just going to whine, kick, and scream when I assign him this task? Or are they just going to get their head down and do it? Now, that's a little different outside, where you do want some back and forth with your team to make sure you've got the right solution. But at the end of the day, when the decision of how to proceed with the strategy or tactic is made, you expect your team to execute it without question.
So, Nathan, you've got to make sure that the resume can be read and it is put together in a way that people in the commercial world can understand it. If it's full of military acronyms, you've got to get them out of the resume. The more you can get across these core skills and these core things that you've had installed into you that other people haven't, the better.
One thing, I'll touch on that before you move on. Don't expect it's still going to get you anywhere. You can try, but what I'm telling you is you will fail. The civilian world just does not understand or value that experience. So don't hang your hat on that when I get out of the military, I'm going to have this easy transition and everyone's just going to welcome me, roll out the red carpet. You're fighting just like any other entry-level candidate into a job.
Yeah, it's so true, that is. I don't know what you think about this, Nathan, but the minute people drop into that complaining or that form of kind of victim, just never ends well. It's like you might feel good momentarily if you complain about the market or the commercial world's harsh, but that's not what gets you to break in. You're right. At that junior end, it's fiercely competitive to break in, isn't it?
Yeah, I was initially disheartened, right? I see this company have a website and it says, we love veterans, we hire veterans. I apply for it and say, here I am, I'm a veteran. And then I don't get a callback. That just happened over and over and they ended up hiring a non-veteran. So it was like, what is happening? That's just platitudes they put on there. It's not going to land you the job. You still have to be the best candidate for that job. You get maybe 2 bonus points for being a veteran, but you don't get 50 bonus points.
Yeah, you've still got to have the other things in place, like you've mentioned. When you've come out the US Air Force, so you've landed a role fairly quickly. I'm just looking at the dates here on LinkedIn. Came out in May 2007, and by November, you were at Richmond Communications as a security engineer team lead. So it looks like it went pretty well. I'm sure it's not as easy as it looked, but how did you land that job? What did you exactly do? I'm just trying to tap into if that could help the listeners.
Oh, holy moly. That was 20 years ago. How did I land that job? Presume I applied for it online. That was still a thing back then. Yeah. My presumption. Yeah. I applied. I got a chance to interview and it's wild that they hired me. Looking back, I wouldn't have hired me for what I was doing. I guess I did the interview well. Back then, I would wear a full suit to a job that was paying $15 an hour or something.
Yeah.
Maybe that was part of it.
No, just from reading between the lines from what you're saying, it sounds like there was some persistence and not taking no for an answer. It sounds like there was a lot of no's in there. Everyone I've had on, like any founder, CEO, team lead, anyone that's progressed up the ranks, it's amazing how everyone has been knocked back again and again. It's very normal. So I think for people listening that are having a tough time and no one's ringing your back and you can't get in, it's really important to understand that's just normal, you know?
Yeah, I do recall one thing when I did get out. I had planned on getting out of security, right? I had did my 5-year stint, I had been trained, and I was going to be a Wolf of Wall Street. And that, so I was applying to those jobs. 90% of my effort was spent trying to apply to those type jobs, and I was getting nowhere fast. And then the security was one of my fallback. I was like, I could always just get a job as a security engineer. As soon as I walked in, I was given a role. Now, this was in Richmond Communications, more physical security. So, one, 20 years ago, the market was desperate need, right? For anyone who understood what electricity was and how it worked in physical security technologies. I pretty much walked in and said, oh, y'all have a job. I have this degree from the Air Force in electronic theory. Would y'all hire me? And they were probably like, oh my God, we just lucked out. We finally found someone. It was a different market back then.
I think it's only the last few years where it's got really, really tough for juniors. At one point, it was just so hot for the tech market and it was great. But now it's certainly toughened up and people need to box a bit more clever. But Nathan, as we move on from progressing into the commercial world, you've moved along quite nicely. You've progressed through various different engineering roles and now up to vice president. What's happened there? How have you made that progress? Is there anything there that the listeners could learn?
My career was always intentional. I knew just my personality that I didn't want to be hands on keyboard or pulling cable my whole life. I always was ambitious. So I took roles that might have even paid less, but that I felt gave me more life experience, workplace experience that could build up to the career that I've had. I've also made sure that I sampled different areas of the industry. So I would be in project management, I've had jobs doing direct sales. I've had jobs doing pre-sales engineer. So I'm prime myself to be able to speak between all these different business units. And that was an investment early in the career that paid off later, as now I can walk down the office and the halls and go to every single business unit and speak to them, you know, understand their job function, empathize with their job function, and help them lead those teams.
Having the sales experience and the technical knowledge, I think that's quite a unique blend. That's probably played a big part, because you get the technical and the communication combined, which is dangerous in a good way.
Yeah. And when you're looking at a senior level role in a company, even if it's in operations, you're going to be in the sales conversation. Every business is selling a product. For you to get to the C-suite, if you can't speak sales, understand sales, understand the market, understand how to get to the market, what your business value as an organization is in the marketplace, then you're not going to be at that table.
Is there anything on the communication pieces in terms of communicating your offering or communicating findings or communicating with C-suite? This is such an underrated and highly valuable skill set to get budget sign-off, to be able to explain why something needs fixing or why they've got to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars on an app to get something fixed. Is there any tips or advice you've got for being able to fine-tune or refine that skill set or have that skill set in the first place?
That's a good point. I think my answer is step one, understand that is required and understand that's a skill set in and of itself. You can't just fall back on your technical acumen and say, oh, everyone will just bow to my technical acumen when I enter a meeting room. You need to learn how to communicate. Thankfully, a lot of that was thrust upon me when I did my MBA, but a lot of the books and classes we took, they're easily obtainable outside of an MBA setting. Books like Crucial Communication is one where you're able to recognize when you're antagonizing someone or they're agreeing with you, like those subtle physical communication clues, verbal responses, understanding, oh, this conversation is not going my way. Influence is another huge one that I use almost daily, and understand the, I think, 7 laws of influence before any major meeting. Things like, what is my position entering this conversation, entering this meeting? Am I here because I'm the subject matter expert? Am I here because they like me? Am I here because they owe me something? These are the laws of influence. When you understand those, you can better make your case in meeting rooms.
Yeah.
So being intentional about learning communication and knowing that it's a skill is step one.
Yeah, I think so, mate. And even that first point you made about recognizing that it is a valuable skill and it is a skill set. I hope not so much these days, but I'm sure there is people out there that perhaps don't even recognize that and they just want to lean on their technical ability. Now, I always say on the podcast, unless you're going to do bug bounty on a freelance basis and just doing bug bounty fees all day, you need to get these communication skills refined. If you're working for any consultancy, it's absolutely imperative.
Yes.
I know in the past you've been pleased with recruiters and had some good experiences on the hiring front. I know you've been doing some hiring lately. It'll be nice for the listeners to hear from an employer's perspective what impresses you, what doesn't impress you, what have people done in the past that has enabled them to get hired with you, and any learnings there for people listening.
We have a methodical hiring process that is outcome-based. We list what are the outcomes we need of this role. We're intentional in our hiring first. Anytime we have a role open, we do a quick reassessment of, is this role still required? Has the position requirements changed over time? And we decide what outcomes do we need of a particular role. We need, by the end of the year, this person should have accomplished XYZ. And so we hire people to fill those outcomes versus what skills do they have. Now, we list skills we think are required to achieve that outcome, right? So we're looking for those. But those are like KPIs. They're not necessarily the end game of that hiring process. We also have a technical test, which I think some people 20 years ago, I remember I first started implementing technical tests in hiring, and the people hated it. They thought, how dare you? I'm a 20-year veteran. My resume should speak for itself. We had people exit the hiring process because of it. Now it's way more acceptable to do that. If you're hiring a technical role, you need to have a technical quiz. I can't tell you how many times these resumes knock it out of the park, and they knock it at the interview, and then the very first week, they're sitting in that chair, and they're like, now, what's the IP address again? In fact, I'll tell you a funny story. We hired a cybersecurity expert for this one particular tool we needed to implement. We were all high-fiving each other after this hire. Like, we had finally found the savior of this particular need we had. And it was like day two. I was standing over his shoulder, and I said, to log into this, I said, type in 192.168.1.28.5 or whatever it was. And he goes, slow down. 192.1. I immediately knew he had no idea that 192.168 was an IP address. And I knew right off the bat, oh, we made a mistake. That's why you've got to have a technical quiz. They need some way to demonstrate that experience.
Definitely. It's so interesting. You mentioned that particular person's resume looking great. We're starting to get the first few calls from prospective clients getting perfect resumes through the door done by AI. So they're getting great resumes, and it's hard to know without doing an interview first who's any good and who's not. I spoke to a chap yesterday who'd got 30 resumes through the door, all looked amazing. He was sick to the back teeth because he'd done 30 interviews and they were all terrible. So I think AI is playing a part because anyone can just produce a perfect resume now.
Yeah, now the workforce is skilled at creating resumes. So that's their skill, making a resume fit the job description, but not the skills actually required for the jobs. That segues into, one, there's so many candidates on the market now, but two, why we have started using recruiters more. Before, we would get 12 candidates and we'd maybe 100 applications, and 12 resumes really stood out, and we'd select a great candidate from three. Now we have 1,000 resumes and 500 of them all look flawless. It's an impossibility, right? There's no way. We'd start seeing 7 people in a row with almost identical resumes, like the exact same format, the same bullets. Did the same resume writer do all these? One of the benefits we found from recruiters was just that front-end loading of sifting through candidates we're unable to sift through. Whereas the recruiting team, they'll just present 3 candidates and it's, holy crap, all 3 of these are right where they need to be.
Yeah, that's good to hear, Nathan. It's nice to hear that the value is coming through in here. I think as well, you mentioned about a lot of candidates on the market. When someone's highly passive and just having a look, I think they're much more honest about their ability levels. When someone's been on the market for a while and they're desperate to get off, as a recruiter, you've got to be careful and probe, because if they've been on the market for a long time and they're desperate to get off, if you say, can you do X, Y, and Z, the answer is going to be yes, unless you probe. And I think that can cause problems as well, because it is tough out there for some people at the minute, isn't it? It's a fierce market.
That's true. The supply and demand is just not in alignment right now. There's still a problem with employers saying, I must have this perfect unicorn, and not looking at a candidate and saying, can they do this? And they're only looking at, have they done this before? And so that's frustrating. How can anyone progress in their career if they're not given opportunity? Right? That's why we look at outcomes, not skills, right? Is this person highly likely to be able to achieve this outcome? Yes or no? And it may be someone who hasn't done it before versus someone who has done it before. We still assess that maybe they did it mediocre. Even though they've done it before, they're coming to us because they didn't do it well at their current role. Whereas this other candidate, we've seen this success path every task they've had. Can that translate to the outcome we need? Yes or no? And if it's a yes, they get equal points to someone who's done it before.
You're looking for someone that's showing real quantifiable examples of getting stuff done, delivering on a project, delivering on time, in full. It doesn't have to be exactly what you're doing, but you're looking for examples of that happening in the past.
Yeah, and one way we have the ability to do that is because we've been a project-based organization, every project we do has new tools, right? We may do Splunk for one customer and then turn around and do, you know, CrowdStrike for another. And guess what? Our engineers don't just happen to be CrowdStrike and Splunk experts day one, right? A lot of the time we'll take this project on and they have to learn. So we're looking for people who can have the fundamentals and then quickly bring value to the table. So someone who, if we have a big Splunk project, we're not going to put out a resume that says must have Splunk 12 years SME or take a hike, because that'll reduce our talent pool to only crappy Splunk engineers, right? Maybe one good Splunk engineer. I'd rather great SIEM SOAR engineers. If you can learn one, do you have the fundamentals of what a SIEM SOAR platform does? I know if you have done that on another, you're going to be able to do it on Splunk in a rapid timeline.
Yeah, cool. Real aptitude levels and ability to pick new things up quick and a desire to learn and absorb new information as well. Because you're right, it moves. You're talking about different projects, but it just all moves so quick, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. So yeah, really looking for aptitude levels. On the communication side, are you looking for like a consulting background or anything like that? Are you just looking for a nice level of communication, or is there anything on that front that could help people?
Yeah, it's your ability. That's key, right? That's why we do face-to-face interviews, video Zoom interviews, and a couple, we have max 3 interview process. But one, can you just communicate easily to someone? That's all the skill we require, because we know that if I only limited my talent pool to MSP engineers, then that's 10% of the market, right? So we just want the best people with these skill sets. But yes, you do have to be able to communicate. For example, could you hold a training class on this platform yourself? Could you write the slideshow? Could you do a 3-day training class? That's the bar that we expect to be able to communicate.
Thanks, mate. It's good. And I like your approach. I'm not just saying it because we're on the pod or anything, but I do like your approach to it as well, because so many people would just ask for the Splunk engineer with 12 years experience. It's incredibly limiting where you could get someone just as good, if not better, by adopting that approach you've just described.
Yeah, that goes back to the person who did not know what an IP address was, right? He was that was when we were looking for the XYZ product superstar, right? And okay, so we limited our search pool to must have XYZ superstar experience, and then it didn't work out. Then we hire someone with the aptitude, and 2 weeks later, all of a sudden, they're 3 weeks ahead of where XYZ superstar had us. He just hires smart people. As we refine our process, the required skills list keeps getting smaller and smaller as we realize that skill didn't translate to anything valuable. Now we just hire smart people.
No, very good. Did that other person then, they just got so focused on one area and got amazing at that and neglected everything else?
I think in that particular case, we thought they were amazing at that, but I don't know what, they were amazing at something, but not what we needed at our company. So good luck to them in the future. We did not detect what they were amazing at.
Hopefully they're not listening, mate. We'll be okay.
That's why I left his or her name out of when we decide to let someone go. You're not succeeding here. You're handcuffing their career, right? Yeah. You're dragging the business down from its goals, and they're not getting where they need to be. So sometimes the best is to let them go so they can find where they're a better fit.
And then I think you're right to say how it is. When you commented on my post yesterday, you just said it how it is. And I was like, yeah, you're just being real.
That can get me in sometimes.
Nah, it's all good, mate. It's all good. So we talked about aptitude levels and learning. I know you mentioned a few books about 15 minutes ago, Crucial or Critical Communication. What I wanted to ask you, is there any books, podcasts, or online content that you're consuming that's helping your career in general, security career, or even just helping your own self-development? Any content or books that you could recommend for the listeners, mate?
There's a new website out. It's called CHATGPT.com. That's your new friend, right? We internally, when we have technical discussions or brainstorming sessions, we're like, let's see what our friend has to say about this. And that's a workforce multiplier. Podcasts, I'll search for a podcast if there's a particular topic. But from a technical standpoint, I haven't, if I need help, how do I configure, how do I deploy this product? There's not a podcast for that. Even if you find a podcast that says, hey, we're everything about endpoint detection. A lot of times it's, you got to sift through just the banter and the people chit-chatting. You're not going to derive actual technical knowledge out of that. So it's like technical entertainment is how I put it. I listen to the CISO series podcasts and yeah, they're fun to hear about and commiserate the problems of our lives. But do I learn much that I bring back to the business? Now I'm going to be in trouble and canceled from my CISO series. Podcasts, technical knowledge, not really. There's a HBR podcast is good to, that's more about obviously business management topics. Otherwise, I think books are the way to go. If you have a deficiency in an area, like crucial conversations I mentioned, I picked that up because I was having problematic, crucial conversations at a business a few years ago. And I'm like, man, so I need to figure out how to address this. So I looked down and said, hey, how do I communicate in these difficult situations? I found that book and I immediately could read a chapter, go to work the next day and implement some of those things. Same things with when I was more in a first-time leadership business strategy role. I searched for business strategy. How do I become a better business strategist? And found the Good to Great series by Jim Collins. Yeah. And then read that. And I'm like, oh, man, I'm not doing that. I'd immediately go back to work and say, how can I implement chapter 3 in my business? Understanding what skill set you need or problem your business is facing and going out and finding a book on that topic is my recommendation.
Yeah, cool. Do you know what else as well, Nathan? Like you're talking there about there was some tricky customers to handle, or there was some conversations that were going down that needed a certain skill set to handle them. I think just like the way you handle that face on, like the exact opposite to that. And I know some people would almost run away and avoid that customer, but you've faced it head on and gone, let's just upskill myself to be able to communicate with this customer effectively. And there's a lot to be learned from that as well, just throwing yourself into it head first and learning. I've just wanted to cover that because some people get a tricky customer and want to hide, but that's just not the way to do it.
This was way more than a tricky customer. It was our internal software development team. And if you've ever had crucial conversations with the software dev team, you can understand why you might need to up your skills.
Right, mate. Was it successful in the end?
No. It helped me know how to navigate through that and be better at communicating.
Yeah, good, mate. And I think on your point to the books as well, like I'm with you on that. I've got certain books where I've just sounds a bit old school, but it's like you get it out, you highlight the pages. It's just something about, I feel like the information just goes in. You absorb the information much better when you've actually got the book in your hand and you're doing it the old school way. I don't think you can ever get away from that.
When I think about a book I read 4 or 5 years ago, there's one key takeaway, maybe two that I've internalized and can speak back to other people. If they said, hey, what was this book about? That I've then it's become a trait or a skill. But to have that, for that to be able to get ingrained into your DNA, it took the whole book, building the case for this concept and repeatedly reinforcing it throughout. If you just see a post online that says, you know, hey, here's how to do crucial conversations, right? That's just going to social media content. It's going to go in one ear, out the other. You're not going to internalize it and be bought into it.
Yeah, definitely. I think having that deeper understanding as well, because I know you mentioned ChatGPT before, and I think sometimes it's great and sometimes it's just not. It's like you actually need to understand the fundamentals behind what you're searching for, because otherwise you can go in the complete wrong direction, can't you?
Yeah, don't get me wrong. It's not even trust but verify. It's definitely a tier below that. It's here's the hint. Now go verify it to keep them around, because I've had times where, you know, 4 or 5 years later, I'm encountering a similar situation So I need a refresher. Now, I don't go read the book, but I'll have OneNote. And after I finish reading the book, or if I'm really good throughout the book, I'll just keep a little OneNote of, hey, what did I learn from this book? And what are the key takeaways? And then when I have that situation in the future, I can go reference that OneNote and say, oh, yeah, that was good. There's a hiring strategy book I have. So whenever I have a new hire coming up, I go back and look at my notes about that hiring strategy. If I enter into a negotiation, I go look at those 7 laws of influence and say, okay, what's my position, right? What's my BATNA, et cetera. 3 years later, you're not even going to remember what podcast it was, let alone what episode it was.
When you write it down, I think there's some science behind the fact that it absorbs into the mind better, and reading back your notes, because sometimes, like, some of the stuff you're saying now and some of the stuff that the podcast guests have said before, I've heard already, but just having it reinforced and hearing it again really helps, because we just forget and go off track. We have to keep pulling ourselves on track, and I think that's pretty normal.
We're consuming too much content these days, so you have to be deliberate in what you choose to retain.
Yeah, that's so true, mate. It's like online, it's like this, yeah, that's so true, that is. In the recruitment world, Nathan, there's so many recruitment podcasts out there. You can listen to one person doing it like this and one person doing it like that. If you're not careful, you're actually just not progressing as quick as you would have done, because you hear about all these different ways that are all working pretty well, and it gets too confusing. So you've got to pick your mentors and pick your strategy, and I think stick with it and stay consistent.
Same in the sales world. Back when I was doing more direct sales, I'd listen to sales podcasts, and at the end of the podcast, you're like, you're super motivated, and man, what a great strategy. That's going to immediately change my life and my pipeline. And then 4 hours later, you're like, you forgot you even listened. It was just fun entertainment, but you didn't internalize it. And then over the course of a year, you listen to 50 podcasts, and name one or two takeaways you had from those at best. So being deliberate, if you're going to listen to a podcast and you like it, truly believe it, you better take action, right? Say, I want to retain this information. So how am I going to do that? Am I going to write a OneNote on the summary of this? Am I going to somehow save this podcast and listen to it 2 or 3 times or once a month? You can't just presume that you'll retain that information.
Nah, definitely. I think you're right, mate, as well. Being deliberate and sticking to it. And I think sometimes, probably show my age a bit here, Nathan, but like some people coming through get bored too easily. If you want to be successful at sales, you've got to stick to it. You've almost got to have a decent appetite for boredom, because you've got to do something again and again, and it's quite repetitive. If you can stick to it over a sustained period of time and be consistent, the results are pretty special. I'm sure you've experienced it yourself, but you have to actually have the discipline. And like you say, be intentional and stick to it. Because if you keep diving off and doing this, you just get nowhere.
If you think your job is getting boring, that may be a sign, right? That you, like, if you're a SOC analyst and you're like, oh, God, I got to assess more of these stupid events, you may not be in the right role, right? You may need to try something else. So, I'm in sales. Another RFP, another client pitch meeting. You're not excited about the core function of your job. That may be a sign.
Yeah, definitely. You've got to keep moving forward or whatever it might be. But yeah, cool. All right. I'm imagining the background you've come from and stuff like that. I'm thinking your mindset will be pretty strong. For people out there that are having a tough time, I feel like 2022 was the best year ever. 23 was probably the toughest year. I think the wider market's still pretty down. I know we're a smaller agency, so it's easy for us to get busy, so we're not a true reflection. But I think there's a lot of people out there still struggling. So the question is, when things have been tough, when things haven't been going your way, have you got any coping mechanisms or things that you do to get through the tough times, mate, that could help others? Tough times in business or tough times in your career or just tough times at all? If it's people on the market that are having a tough time or people been laid off, is there any kind of mental coping mechanisms you've got or mechanisms to keep yourself moving forward?
I can tell you this, for people looking for a role, even people mid-career who want to switch, you got to go where the waves are, right? It's a big ocean of the job market and the economy, and there's waves, right? Cyber, the wave is not going up as far as the supply and demand. So as far as you catching that wave and soaring to new heights, it's very difficult. Now, AI, that's a new wave, right? So you need to consider whether or not it's time to jump on that wave. Next year, it may be something else that we don't even know about. A new wave is going to come. And for you to progress, it's always good to keep an eye on that wave. It's how I really got into cybersecurity. I was in physical security 20 years ago. It was a bunch of coax, analog, CCTV cameras. And there was a wave of these IP cameras. All of a sudden, these cameras were starting to get on the network. And I detected, this is a new wave. I should get ahead in front of it. So I went out and got a CCNA. So I would be more skill ready to do these projects. As the demand for storage and bandwidth and CPU and GPU processing, I went out and got a Server Plus certification so I'd be able to spec out and work on these servers. I kept seeing these trends in the market and then skilling up to meet the demand. And eventually, I had all this IT fundamentals and saw the cyber wave coming. I said, I need to start paying attention to this and skilling up. That's where I am now. Watch out for those market trends. Be intentional. Be cognizant of where the market is and where it's going and whether you're going to ride the next wave or hold out.
Thanks, Nathan. It's true, mate. Like you say, it was so hot before. And there's still subsections of the market that are hot and we see demand coming through. So yeah, it's looking where the hot areas are and stepping back and just being intelligent and smart about it, mate. An hour soon goes, doesn't it, when you're recording? Like, we've almost done an hour.
Yeah, it's easy when you have a fun conversation with you. Yeah,
it's been nice, mate. Good chatting, good catching up. It's nice to hear you're busy, mate, and you're growing, because we see all these headlines that this tech company's laying off and this company's laying off. There is some negativity in the market, but it's nice to hear. I think there's a lot of smaller companies like yourself that are doing well, and it's good to see.
Yeah, we're in that niche space. So when you can, you find a niche and target, if you can attack that, right? You're providing a specialized service. It's the big guys that do everything for everyone that they're more in line with the stock market and the economy. But when you have that kind of specialized niche, especially if it's in a economy demand, then you're pretty safe.
Cool, mate. Is it going to be a crazy last few weeks before the end of the year, or are you going to be okay?
No, unfortunately, we have a big implementation that's wrapping up this year, and we're crossing our fingers it gets done before Christmas week.
Don't work too hard, buddy, and make sure you get some rest and have a nice beer at Christmas and plenty of food to reward yourself.
All right.
All right, mate. Nice to see you, mate, and thanks for your time as well. It's been good.
Thanks for having me.